morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, we're going to hear Florida This Week, a panel discussion about state and local politics. We're going to be taking your phone calls and also taking your email questions in. But first, three listener comments about last Friday's program. Last Friday, we got into a discussion about the threats by President Trump to bomb Syria, threats that he eventually carried out Friday night. Here's what three listeners had to say following Friday's show.
Even if Assad or the Syrian government gassed its own people, and that's very questionable, why would anyone think that the American government cares about Syrian people when it doesn't even care about its own people? This government hasn't been for the people since Carter was president over 40 years ago. It cares only about oligarchs and big corporations, and WMNF has done a pretty good job exposing that over the years. Thank you.
On today's program, you had a Trump supporter calling, talking about Trump, knowing what he's doing, and he has a plan. Well, the past history has shown that Trump has no plan and doesn't know anything about what he's doing, because he make a statement, and then you will find out that 80% of the time his statements are mostly false, if not totally false. He doesn't seem to know what he's doing, and so to say that he has a plan for Syria is contradicted by the fact that he usually seems to not know what he's doing, and half the time he has to backtrack and change his statement because he doesn't even remember what he said from one day to the next. My name is George.
Jason St. Pete. I believe James Comey. I can't wait to read the book. And the guy in the White House is not the most powerful guy in the world. His boss is Vladimir Putin.
Some listener comments that came in after last Friday's program. Well, you were listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're going to talk about state and local politics with a panel right now that includes Adam Smith, who is the political editor at the Tampa Bay Times. And we're going to talk about, among other things, Governor Scott's decision to run for U.S. Senate. As you listen to this conversation and you want to comment about anything you hear the panelists say, you can email us here in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. Here's Florida This Week. Coming up next, Governor Scott makes it official. He's running for U.S. Senate against Bill Nelson. A judge says Tampa resident Joe Redner should be allowed to grow his own marijuana for medical use. Four-term Congressman Dennis Ross from Lakeland will not run for re-election. And a state Senate race in Hillsborough County draws a high-profile Democratic Party leader and stirs up some political intrigue. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
From the WEDU studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lori.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Adam Smith is the political editor for the Tampa Bay Times. Chris Ingram is a host on Bay News 9 and AM Radio 820 News and a Republican. Ashley Walker is the Florida State Director of For Our Future and a Democrat. And Noah Pransky is an investigative reporter for 10 News WTSB. Great to have you here. Thanks for coming. Well, in what could become one of the most watched, most expensive, and closest U.S. Senate races in the country this year, Republican Governor Rick Scott made it official this week. He's running to unseat Florida's Democratic Senator Bill Nelson. Scott is a close ally of President Trump, having endorsed him early and campaigned for him in 2016. The governor, who's being term limited out of office after 8 years, says he's now aiming for the U.S. Senate because he says career politicians have created gridlock and dysfunction in the federal government. He called Washington, D.C. a disaster. The battle for the seat is likely to be epic. Bill Nelson has not had a serious challenge since winning his first term in 2000. Scott is a multimillionaire, former healthcare executive, who points to job creation under his watch as one of his biggest accomplishments. But Scott's connection to President Trump could become a flashpoint.
So, Chris, what are Scott's positives and negatives?
Well, his positive is obviously still that he can write a big check. His negatives are he's still not real warm and fuzzy, but he's better than he used to be. I think Bill Nelson, he's probably got to be nervous, more nervous than since his initial election campaign against Ireland. He's since run against the likes of Catherine Harris and Connie Mack the Fourth, and Bill McCollum. On average, he's won by, I think, 13.5 points. This is going to be a close race. Scott can dump a lot of money into the campaign. He's done well to kind of inoculate himself on certain issues like gun control, for example. But then on the other hand, I'm not sure how motivated Republicans are going to be to come out and vote for him, especially in this year that we're anticipating this big blue wave. We'll see if that happens or not. But I'm not sure that Republicans are all warm and fuzzy about Rick Scott. He just passed and signed the largest budget the largest budget in state of Florida's history. And he was supposed to be this fiscal conservative. But he has done real well on the jobs issue. But he's going to have to defend, well, were you just the recipient of good times? And how much of your program policies actually led to these jobs in Florida?
Ashley, what do you think about Scott's positives and negatives?
Well, I think that, for the first time, Governor Scott's going to have to run on a record. It's going to be hard for him to run as an outsider, which he was able to successfully do when he initially ran for governor in 2010. And so I think it's going to be a hard frame for him to push to voters. But, you know, I think that he's got a record to run on. I think that he has done a good job of creating jobs, they've mostly been low-paying jobs. Nearly half of Floridians are considered working poor. And I think that, you know, when you have a choice between Senator Nelson, who's been advocating for middle-class Floridians for years, and Rick Scott, who has been, advocating for campaign donors and corporations, I think there's a real stark contrast, and I think that Governor Scott's going to have a real campaign on his hands. And I agree with Chris, it's going to be a very close race and the cycle.
Adam, this is the in this race, Scott is going to be running against Nelson in an off-year race. So this is the typical year where Democrats don't come out. Do you think that there's going to be a blue wave this year?
You know, how there's going to be some wave, but whether it's a little ripple or a significant wave, it's just too early to say. I will say Bill Nelson often says, you know, I always run like I'm 10 points behind. That's not really true. I covered the last two races against Catherine Harris and Connie Mack IV. He basically sat back and watched the dumpster fires go on around him. So, you know, I think it's going to be an amazing race. I call it the Battle of the Blands, because neither of these guys is especially charismatic. But Scott really is, given the climate for Republicans, he's surprisingly strong right now. He's between his performance at Irma, the NRA thing, I think his numbers are a lot stronger than a lot of people realize.
He's got a positive approval rating in the state, right?
Yeah. So given the climate and given the way he had super glued himself to Donald Trump, you'd think he'd be in more trouble than he really is.
Well, Noah, that is going to be the issue that Nelson tries to hammer Scott with, and that is Scott's close ties to President Trump.
I think the inoculation reference is a good one that Chris made, because Governor Scott's had a lot of cover this year. You know, it's kind of a different governor than we've seen through certainly the first half of his time in the governor's mansion, if not most of his time there. He's increased budget numbers across the board. He's been dishing out earmarks left and right to people. I think this is a positive campaign right now, but it's going to turn negative very quickly, and it's going to turn very hard. You're going to see both candidates probably try to link their opposition to a president that they think is unpopular. You know, Rick Scott is going to go back to the Obama well that got him elected the first two times. He's going to link Bill Nelson to Obama, Obamacare, and some unpopular Obama policies. And Bill Nelson is, of course, going to do the same with Donald Trump and Rick Scott.
Bill Nelson is so remarkably undefined after all these years that if Rick Scott has a lot of money, he's going to define him as this crazy liberal tax increaser. And that's Bill Nelson will worry.
Yeah, I was going to say a similar thing. I mean, Nelson's strengths are also his weakness in that he's not really defined. You can't point to any signature piece of legislation despite the fact that he's been a public elected official for 40 some odd years. There's really no one signature thing that he can say, hey, Bill Nelson did this. At the same time, there's nothing that you can point to that says, you know, here's a really bad thing that he's done. I mean, you could argue, well, Republicans don't like him because he supported the ACA, Obamacare, but, you know, okay, big deal, we've gone beyond that. And there really isn't anything out there that I think is a tremendous liability for him.
And I think he's going to fail to capitalize on some of his best opportunities, which is to hammer Rick Scott in a debate format. As Adam said, it's the Battle of the Blaine. I mean, these are going to be terrible debates. They're going to be incredibly boring, unless they surprise us. But nailing Rick Scott and his record is something fairly easy to do for a Democrat right now. I mean, you've got 7.5 years of resume where Rick Scott has trounced on the First Amendment, he's trounced on the environment, the wages are low, as Ashley said. There's a lot to hit him on.
Ashley, my sense is that teachers are fired up this year. What's your sense on what role will education play in this campaign, and would Scott be on the defensive when it came to education?
Yeah, I mean, education funding has been decreased. Your public education funding has been being decreased for each legislative cycle that Scott has been in session. So I think that Scott's been in office. So I think that, yes, that teachers are tired of being underpaid and schools being unfunded and getting continuous mandates from Tallahassee. And just this last legislative session, Rick Scott signed some very damaging legislation into law that's going to negatively impact and shift dollars that should be going into public education to charter schools. And I think that has teachers energized. I think that gun safety is a big issue and school safety is a big issue with teachers. And I think that between the safety issues and the cuts in funding, that teachers and parents are definitely energized this cycle.
Adam, what Chris said about Nelson being in public office for 40 years, state insurance commissioner, he was a member of Congress before he was in the U.S. Senate. Is that the death knell if Scott says, okay, look over there, Bill Nelson, career politician, get him out of office?
It doesn't seem to be a cycle for career politicians or a time for career politicians. But I will quote Tony DiMatteo, the former Pinellas GOP chairman, and his view was, it's going to be very, very hard to beat Bill Nelson because he's just a nice guy. He's never does anything that really, like Chris said, is makes you really ticked off. He seems like a gentleman, and this is a dyed-in-the-wool Republican who doesn't expect Scott to win.
Chris, while Governor Scott says he's an outsider, nobody follows the polls more closely than Governor Rick Scott. He reads them like they're a roadmap.
Well, and make no mistake, he not only does that, while he's not a career politician, he is absolutely part of the establishment now. As 8 years a governor of the fourth largest state in the country, a good associate of Donald Trump's, he is definitely part of the establishment. Although I kind of question his motivation for wanting to run for the United States Senate. Like, why does he want that job? He's been a CEO of corporations and now the governor of the state of Florida, and he wants something done. He gets things done. You go up to the Senate and you're just going to sit around and talk about things and wait for something to happen.
I think he wanted that job more than he wanted to be governor.
Do you really?
I mean, he was always focused on the ACA and federal issues, right. And by the time he started looking around, Marco Rubio had already taken off and the space was taken for Rick Scott.
Actually, this is going to be a huge TV campaign, right? Any estimate as to what it's going to cost if you add up the numbers on both sides?
I think there's going to be a lot of money that comes in from outside groups that has nothing to do with either campaign, and it's going to be a very expensive year. It could be up to $100 million, I think, for a race like this, and it's going to be extremely close. Competitive statewide elections in Florida are, sometimes decided between 50 and 100,000 votes, and I think this race is going to be no different. And going into this environment, I would rather be a Democrat than a Republican with a weight of Donald Trump.
Even in an off-year election?
Even in an off-year election.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well, a state circuit court judge has ruled that a Tampa man has the right to grow his own medical marijuana.
The judge ruled that well-known nightclub owner Joe Redner is entitled under state law to grow and use marijuana for juicing as recommended by his physician. The 77-year-old Redner is in remission for lung cancer and is one of more than 95,000 state residents who is registered as a medical marijuana patient. As of now, the judge's ruling applies only to Redner, but if upheld, it could open the door for others who have said the state should allow whole plant use. The state's Department of Health immediately filed an appeal. In a ruling, the judge said the state has been non-compliant in implementing the medical marijuana amendment that was passed in 2016 by an overwhelming majority of voters, 71%.
Well, no, this is all going to come down to how the courts interpret what the voters' intent was and what the amendment said back in 2016.
And that's the reason that he filed the case. I mean, yeah. Joe Redner doesn't need the court's approval to go and smoke pot, right? He owns the Mons Venus. I don't think he's too worried about anyone's opinion around him. But he's trying to make a point. He's trying to set some case precedent. And with his attorney, Luke LaRoe, they've tackled big things like this before. I think they're trying to establish that the state can't get in the way of someone wanting to take in medicinal marijuana. Of course, they can't smoke it. They can just use it in every other way.
Redner's got a track record of winning these kind of cases in court. You know, the marijuana side, in his other life as an adult nightclub owner, he's got a track record of winning these cases.
I like that you call him a nightclub owner, right? I mean, he owns the Mons Venus. He's known as a strip club owner, but he's a very big First Amendment guy, and he is clearly willing to stick up for it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Chris, what do you think the voter intent was?
I think whether you're a pot smoker or not, you look at this and you're really frustrated with the state government, the Department of Health, the legislature, the governor, that they haven't implemented the will of the people. And I think that there are going to be repercussions for that as people like Redner and his attorney and John Morgan, who's still advocating this policy position, that they start to bring these issues to light that, hey, look, you guys voted for this in a constitutional amendment two years ago, and that it's still not being implemented at the level that voters said it should be done. It's going to be a real liability for a lot of politicians.
It took the state 5 years to get redistricting right, though, after the voters approved it, so I'm not holding my breath that we're going to see this fixed.
One last question. Let me throw it out to the table, and that is, medical marijuana won here a few years ago by 71% of the vote. If somebody were to get a petition campaign to get recreational marijuana on the ballot, would it come close to 71%? Would it go over 60? You don't think so. You're shaking
your head.
I don't
think it'd be 71%, but I think it would pass. I think there'd be certainly a majority. Whether they get to 60%, I don't know, but I understand that the Constitutional Revision Commission has a language on that might be on the ballot to actually raise the threshold even further to be like a two-thirds vote requirement for voter-initiated amendments.
All right. Well, Republican Congressman Dennis Ross of Lakeland will not seek re-election to a fifth term. He represents what's considered a strong Republican district that includes parts of Polk and Hillsborough counties.
Ross was first elected to the House in the Tea Party wave in 2010. The sudden announcement from him came the same day that House Speaker Paul Ryan said he will not seek re-election. Ross's departure adds to the growing number of retirements by GOP lawmakers going into this November's midterm elections.
So, Adam, he made the announcement on the same day that Paul Ryan announced that he was stepping down. Do we have any indication why Ross made this decision?
I think you make a good point, and if you're a suspicious, cynical reporter like Noah, you think you make an announcement like that right after Paul Ryan's because you want to bury it. But I don't, it's the old, I want to spend more time with the family, and he wasn't having that much fun. But it shocked everybody, even people who are pretty close to him.
Is there a designated successor? Sometimes when a congressperson steps down, there's already somebody waiting in the wings who's kind of pre-approved.
Yeah, usually the fix is in, and it does not seem to be at this case. I mean, there's some names floating out there, Neil Comby, Scott Franklin, a commissioner in Lakeland that I think he's tight with, but this seems to be a very wide-open race where suddenly everybody's scrambling to figure out if they can do it.
Well, actually, that's true. A lot of people want the seat, both on the Republican side and the Democratic side. What are you hearing Democrats? Do they think that, you know, Ross won this last two elections by a pretty good margin, 58, 59% and 60%. The Democrats haven't had much chance the last two times. Could a Democrat have a chance winning the seat?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is the latest in the Republican retirement wave, the Congressman Ross announcing his retirement. And I think this the demographics in this district have changed tremendously over the years. And I think an open seat is a much different ballgame than a seat against an incumbent member of Congress. And so with there being a growing Hispanic community, the district is 25% minority. And actually, there are more registered Democrats in that district than Republicans. I think it's a seat that Democrats will look at and look at the possibilities in a cycle that could be a very good cycle for us.
There's a couple of Democrats have already announced, Andrew Learned and Greg Pilkington, and there's several other Democrats that are interested in that seat.
Yeah, but I mean, first of all, this is a district, yes, there are more registered Democrats than Republicans, but these are sort of Southern, really Republican voting Democrats. Trump won that district by 10 points, so that is really Trump country. And I think Democrats don't have much a bench to get in there.
Ashley, is Alan Grayson going to get in on the Democratic side?
I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. Okay. You'd have to ask Alan Grayson. It's hard to say.
Chris, on the Republican side, a lot of Republicans want that seat.
Well, you know, it remains to be seen who might want it enough to actually jump in, but I'm hearing names for like Kelly Stargell, the state representative, Dennis Ross, Dana Young was mentioned, we were talking about earlier. I mean, she's not even anywhere near the district, but the names are being floated around. They may or may not even be legitimate in terms of being considered or considering to do it. We'll see what happens, but an open seat is certainly something that a lot of people chomp at the bit to have an opportunity to run at. And despite it's a very, very minor Democrat advantage. I mean, I think it's several, just 100 or 2,000 voters, right. Yeah. And as Adam alluded to, it's still a pretty safe
throw out a couple other names, though. Rhonda Storms, who would be interesting to have her feuding with Kathy Castor back like the old county commission days. And Tom Lee, flirting with another race.
What about Grady Judd?
Everyone assumed Grady Judd was the heir apparent, and he came out right away, said, I'm not interested in another office ever. So that kind of quieted and really opened the field up. And I think the interesting thing we're starting to see, because it is such a wide open field, and I consider it a wide open Republican field, because unless a Democrat with deep pockets and a big name jumps in, it's going to be a Republican seat. But we're starting to see Hillsborough and Polk, right? I mean, you're going to see probably a big name from each, and it'll be interesting if they lock horns here. But Kelly Stargell against Tom Lee would be a fascinating primary. You don't see a lot of coordination across the county line here because there's a lot at stake, right? This is a seat that's drawn into both East Hillsborough and Northwest Polk County. Wherever your winner comes from is going to have a lot of pull. And, you know, both counties have a lot at stake.
And as it relates to Sheriff Grady Judd, there's just too many people in competition for those cameras in Washington.
I think he would beat them all.
You know, I'm still wondering why Ross gets out, though, because, you know, he would have been a shoo-in for re-election.
He told me that he never wanted to serve more than 10 years. And as he looked at it, this was a good time to go and let another Republican step into his shoes. Mm-hmm. He says it's a safe district, so it has nothing to do with winning his seat. He said it was just time. I miss Florida. And I asked him if he's going to stay up in D.C. and lobby. He said, no way. I have to move home.
Except that it's a terrible time to make sure it stays a Republican seat because it looks like it could be a terrible year for Republicans.
Yeah, it's a real problem for the Republican Party for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, outgoing House Democratic leader Janet Cruz of Tampa announced this week that she will challenge Republican State Senator Dana Young, setting up what's sure to be a hard-fought election for what's widely considered to be a swing seat for the state Senate.
The district stretches from South Tampa to northwest Hillsborough County. Hillary Clinton won it in 2016, but by only 51%. There's already a Democrat in the race, attorney Bob Busing, who lost to Young 2 years ago in a three-way race. Among Cruz's issues, she wants to take on the lawmakers who, she says, put the insurance industry, the NRA, and for-profit schools ahead of the needs of the public.
So, Ashley, Bob Busing ran for that seat for the Democrats two years ago in a three-way race. Didn't make it. He's still in the race. He hasn't, as far as I know, he's not gotten out, right?
I don't believe so, but I think that it's going to be a very hard primary for him if he stays in. I think that Janet is a top recruit for Democrats, and I know that a lot of Democrats are really excited about her. I think that she has a large appeal to voters in the district, you know, being a Hispanic woman with great name ID. I think she's the best recruit that we could have gotten for that seat, and I know that people are really excited about this opportunity to pick up the seat, the state Senate seat.
Mm-hmm. Adam, what do you think about that race?
I feel like Busing gets a little bit of a knock. I mean, Redner helped deliver the seat to Dana Young.
Because he was the third candidate in that state Senate race 2 years ago.
He took off some of the vote, and it was probably Democratic vote. But that said, you've got a woman candidate in Dana Young, and you're going to be way better off if Democrats field a woman candidate, let alone that's got a lot of Hispanic voters, and Janet Cruz helps.
I think that Trump won that district. I mean, not Trump. I'm sorry.
Clinton won it by 51%.
I mean, Clinton,
It's a Republican-leaning district, but it's a sort of South Tampa, squishy, moderate, you know, the kind of Republicans that don't like
Trump. The opportunity for the Democrats is tremendous there, and I think you could easily see $5, $10 million sunk into that state Senate race.
What about Dana Young's record in the Senate? Has she done anything that would make her vulnerable?
The Democrats are certainly going to find something that they think that she's vulnerable on, but I think the real issue for Dana is just going to be getting out there and communicating with her voters that she has done a good job and that she deserves to get reelected. Janet Cruz is a formidable opponent, though, and certainly very well connected in the district. district as well. And is this going to be a battle of two female titans?
Not a great time to have an A-plus rating from the NRA in that district like Denny Young.
Well, and she's been very reliable with party leaders on the Republican side. There's been very few times in her years up there where she's spoken out against party leadership. This year, for instance, we were covering the texting and driving bill that soared through the House with very little opposition, comes to the Senate soaring through, and all of a sudden it dies. And it was mysteriously died. And Dana Young had always said she was a supporter on it. And behind the scenes, I was talking to her. She said she would support it. She would help get it through. And you never heard anything. Mm. She never really stepped out and bucked party leadership. And that will probably be her biggest weakness.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I mean, she is party leadership. So every bill that's passing through Tallahassee is a bill that, you know, she has some responsibility for as a part of party leadership.
Well, and I would point out, similar arguments can be made by Dana about her likely opponent in Ms. Cruz as well. I mean, I don't think that she's been one to buck the Democratic Party establishment. She's been very much a leader as well. Look, at the end of the day, though, the voters in that district, they don't care about all this political, you know, process stuff. They want to know about what are you doing for me, right. And do they feel better because of Dana Young, or do they think they would be better off with Janet Cruz? That's going to be what this is boiled down to.
Ashley, realistically, how many state Senate seats do you think are in play for this election this year?
I think there are five or six seats that are in play, and I think that Democrats have a real opportunity to pick up two or three of those.
And if you were to rank this one, the seat currently held by Dana Young,
I think it's a tier one seat. I think that you're going to see Democrats and allies of the party to go all in this seat, especially now that Janet has jumped into the race, because I think she's a great recruit, and I think that she has a real opportunity to win the seat.
Okay. Well, before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? Chris, let's start with you.
Well, I'm going to take off my partisan political hat, and just as Chris Ingram, I was so disgusted when I saw this House Bill 631 that came to the public's attention about 2 weeks ago, and that's the beach ban bill. And I am just so bothered by that. Any Republican that voted for that, I'm not going to vote for it, to include, and I stated this on my radio show, Rick Scott. They have really just defined themselves as everything that our Democrats always try to label them with, which is being a party of the rich, and to deny people the opportunity to go out and use the public beaches, the nice soft sand of the public beaches, it just reeks of the economic kind of warfare we always get accused of that I try to defend, and you can't do it this year. And any Republican that voted for that bill ought to be ashamed of themselves.
And if Nelson's looking for an issue to hammer Scott on.
I think every Democrat in the state that's running, regardless of what party or race that you're running for, they ought to hit Republicans on this. But my understanding, too, is that a lot of Democrats voted for it. In fact, the sponsor of the bill was a Democrat. So really, it's a matter of challengers hitting any opponent that they're running against that voted for this bill as being very anti-populist. And I think that just reeks.
All right. Noah, your other big story?
I'm going to go back to Congressman Dennis Ross, because for months when we were doing our zombie campaign story about former lawmakers abusing old campaign funds after they left office, we could never get a comment, along with our partners at the Tampa Bay Times, we could never get a comment from Dennis Ross. And now we know why. He told me the other day, I asked him if he was going to close his account down, that he was done campaigning. Now that he was done campaigning, he said no. He plans to keep it open and keep spending down the road.
How much is in that account?
He's got about $250,000 right now, but he said he's had a strong first quarter fundraising. We'll see those numbers in a few days. He could have $500,000 in there.
Wow. Ashley, your other big story?
I think the big story coming up this week is going to be the Constitutional Review Commission. Next week, they're set to vote on which amendments they're going to put on the ballot. And what you're seeing is they're lumping two and three issues together, taking unpopular issues, pairing them with other popular issues in efforts to pass. And most notably, there's some damaging amendments there that would really affect public education and funding. And I think that it's going to be a very big story in the next week.
And they're aiming to put 12 on the ballot?
Aiming to put 12 on the ballot is my understanding,
All
yes.
All right. Adam, your other big story?
It's tough to be a straw in the city of St. Petersburg these days, because some of the administration there is gunning to ban straws. And how far they go with that, we don't know. But we can count on the legislature next year to pass a law forbidding local governments to mess with straws.
Thanks, everybody, for a great show. Thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. My guests were Adam Smith, who is the editor of politics at the Tampa Bay Times. Chris Ingram is a Republican and a radio talk show host. Ashley Walker
is with a group called For Our Future. She ran the Obama campaign here in Florida in 2012. And Noel Pransky is an investigative journalist at WTSP 10 News. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard, you can email us in the studio at dj@wmnf.org. We talked about the Scott versus Nelson U.S. Senate race, and we've got some email comments about that. Medical marijuana, Dennis Ross stepping down from Congress, the Republican House member from the Lakeland area, and Janet Cruz jumping into a state Senate race that includes a district that is on the south side and west side and northwest side of Hillsborough County, south side of Tampa. Bob Busing is a Democrat. He's already in that race. Dana Young is the Republican who currently holds that seat. Very interesting races coming up. All those races will be either in August when we have the primary or in November when we have the general election. So we got a couple of comments about the Nelson versus Scott race. Gina writes this. She said, I looked it up on Wikipedia, and this is what I found. Senator Nelson got an F rating from the NRA. He's supported laws that favor middle and lower class Floridians and Democrats. And we need to bring up the past, such as Rick Scott's taking the fifth in the United Healthcare probe, his blowing off desperately needed grant money for high-speed rail and Medicaid for the Affordable Care Act, and all the privatization that has truly harmed this state. Gina goes on to write, Scott's embrace of what is tantamount to Jim Crow laws, and no way can Rick Scott say he's not a career politician. Please, he bought the governorship. Don't get me started, writes Gina. So that's Gina's email about that. Obviously a Bill Nelson supporter. Now, Jim in St. Pete, not so hot about Bill Nelson. Jim writes, one of your guests on Florida This Week just claimed that Senator Nelson has not done anything to anger his constituents. I can immediately think of two. His recent decisions to support a rollback in regulations for big banks while failing to oppose military support for Saudi Arabia's slaughter of civilians in Yemen. Both of those decisions by Senator Nelson are enough for me to continue advocating for a progressive alternative to Nelson, or failing that, leaving the box on the ballot for Florida Senator this November blank, leaving it empty, writes Jim. And Jim goes on to say, we can't continue electing right-wing Democrats for Congress and expecting anything to change. Jim says, I'm not a troll. I'm just fed up with Democratic Party failure. So we could comment about Jim's email and also Gina's email. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. You can also call us up at 813-239-9663. That's 813-239-9663. There's other news that's happening. I'll tell you about it, and we can talk about the upcoming elections, or we can talk about some of the interviews that took place over TV over the weekend. We can talk about President Trump's bombing of Syria. John in Ozona writes, regarding Governor Scott's announcement that he's running for U.S. Senate, in his rah-rah me speech, Scott named two reasons he was able to achieve his greatness, but he should have added a third advantage, that he was a Caucasian male. Also, I think he really wanted to say drain the swamp, but sensed it might be a bad idea, writes John in Ozona. All right, so we can talk about that. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Speaking of Jim Crow laws, I was just looking this up. The governor's office has sent out a press release today. And it's in regard to how the state treats convicted felons who have served their sentences. The state does not automatically restore their right to vote. It makes them apply for that right after 5 years of being out of prison. And then the state cabinet essentially hears their appeal. And Governor Scott's office has just issued this press release saying the 11th Circuit should stay the clemency ruling. Now, a judge in Tallahassee has said that Florida's system of restoring voting rights violates both the state constitution and the U.S. Constitution. The governor's communications director said this, today The Florida Attorney General's office filed a reply in the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, continuing to urge that Judge Mark Walker's unprecedented ruling be stayed. Judge Walker of Tallahassee, this is according to the governor, recklessly ordered elected officials to change decades of practice in a matter of weeks. This does not give the victims of crimes the voice they deserve. The governor's office goes on to say, Governor Scott will always stand with victims of crimes, not criminals. Let's remember, these criminals include those convicted of crimes like murder, violence against children, and domestic violence. So that's the argument they're making to not restore voting rights automatically for convicted felons, that victims of the violence are being left out. And actually, if you go to the clemency hearings in the cabinet, what you'll find is that very few victims ever show up to object to restoration of voting rights. That almost never happens in the Florida cabinet. And you can watch those meetings on TV, too, because the cabinet meetings are streamed on the web. And you can see for yourself whether or not any victims object to having people's voting rights restored. It would just be an odd thing. Victims don't worry about voting rights. They worry about restitution. And they worry about punishment. But once a person is out of prison, victims don't tend to climb on board. So we could talk about that too. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Some other news too, reading from the Associated Press, a group of alumni from a conservative Catholic university in South Florida want the Florida school to rescind an invitation to Education Secretary Betsy DeVos to speak at the school's graduation, citing rollbacks she has made to programs aimed at protecting civil rights and the disabled. Naples Daily News reported Sunday that 36 graduates of Ave Maria University are protesting the secretary's scheduled speech at the May 5th ceremony, where 250 students will receive diplomas. Ave Maria University President Jim Towey said no current students have complained about DeVos's appearance, and he will not rescind the invitation. So that controversy brewing down there in Naples, two-hour drive south of us here in the Tampa Bay area. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And Frank Knox is one of our phone producers today. I want to mention, too, last night, if you stayed up to the very end of the interview that James Comey gave to ABC News, to George Stephanopoulos, he was asked whether or not President Trump should be impeached. And let's listen to the answer that the former FBI director gave last night on TV about whether or not President Trump should be impeached.
I don't buy the stuff about him being mentally incompetent or early stages of dementia. He strikes me as a person of above average intelligence who's tracking conversations and knows what's going on. I don't think he's medically unfit to be president. I think he's morally unfit to be president.
What is the remedy? Should Donald Trump be impeached?
Impeachment is a question of law and fact and politics.
Well, you're a citizen. You have a judgment.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'll give you a strange answer. I hope not. Because I think impeaching and removing Donald Trump from office would let the American people off the hook.
Comey went on to criticize President Trump over his comments about the Charlottesville protests, over his treatment of women, and the president's lack of morality. That was a part of the answer that was given last night about why Comey thinks that President Trump is unfit for office but should not be impeached. So we could talk about that. 813-239-9663. Ron in West Tampa sent this email, and he said, Gina's email only aired by saying that Scott was CEO of United Healthcare. He was chief of HCA, Hospital Corporation of America. But Scott pleaded the Fifth Amendment 75 times in that debacle and really stood out when he refused to take a stand on climate change. And there's so much else. So Ron giving reasons why he won't vote to elect Governor Rick Scott as a U.S. Senator. Let's go back to the phones. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin. Gary, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah, you know, Rob, you are a topic of conversation because you are a leader in conversation topicking. And I was talking to someone who's a conservative, and he said, well, I followed your advice to listen to Rob Loray, and he's such a lefty. Why is that? And I'm like, oh, no. So I looked up your history, and I think it would be useful for all of us if you would explain, for example, if I understand correctly, you went to Antioch College, and Antioch College and the few other institutions like it are places where progressive, ethical, religious, spiritual values are part of the educational process. And Antioch looks to have always been a groundbreaking, very progressive institution. And I know that in our bubble, the progressive bubble, most of us just take for granted fairness, social justice, environmental preservation, an orderly, safe, beautiful, wonderful society. But many of the listeners have never understood progressivism. They think of it as communism, and they don't understand people like yourself who've been educated at institutions that are completely different from regular higher education. So I know that you're not an ego-headed person, and the show isn't about Rob Lori, but I think that your past influences why you're so fair-minded, why you can handle even the most irate and rude callers, and why you're constantly bringing, you know, progressive truth to the listenership, many of whom have never been exposed to it before. So it's up to you if you want to go further with that.
All right. Gary, why don't you have your friend call? Have your friend call up, okay? And make that charge about, you know, I don't know what he was listening to, you know, if that he objected to, that he thought was so far out of bounds. But have your friend call up.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is that we take it for granted about why we oppose criminals in the presidency and why we oppose all the other bad things that are happening to America, militarism, corruption. But a lot of conservatives have never been exposed to progressive values or ideals. They've been raised to believe that greed is good, power is good, dominance is good. And when I look at your experience as an Antioch College graduate and see the difference between that and USF or Gainesville or Tallahassee FSU, I just think that your persona is a real new thing that most people who aren't in our progressive community, they just can't wrap their heads around, so they just automatically label you as, quote, a lefty or a commie or a radical, not understanding that what informs your way and your traditions are really the best values of America.
All right, Gary, thanks a lot. I don't really want to talk about myself, if that's okay. I think we should talk about the issues that are at hand. If you listen closely to the show, I don't tell you what to think. I am really not giving you a lot of my opinion. We're listening to a lot of callers. That's typically what happens. And there will be callers who will call up and say they think President Trump is good. We've had several people do that in the last few days and make their case why President Trump is good. We had one caller last week saying that President Trump told the truth. And he called in at the very end of the show. I think we should talk about the issues, not so much the hosts. And you can judge for yourself whether or not you think I'm. I've had angry calls from people who say that I'm very right wing and I don't bring up this and I don't bring up that. You know, I think it's really not a good thing to talk about me. So I'm going to just segue real quickly out of that and read some more emails. James writes this. He said, I've seen a bumper sticker today, electric clown expect a circus, or I see, elect a clown expect a circus. Thought it was appropriate, writes James. And here's somebody unsigned, or actually a Bob in Largo says, I don't remember the specifics. Nelson got a really good land deal over on the East Coast. I bet it comes up in the race, writes a Bob in Largo. All right, Pat from Sarasota says, please don't be shy. We all love you so much. We need to have a discussion about your skill set, that exactly how you shape the conversation so we can change people's minds. That's why I listen to you, and you teach me more about it every day. I'm really not here to try to change people's minds. I'm here to try to have an open and democratic discussion. But, you know what the MNF mission is. It's to provide a forum where people who believe that peace and social justice are not alien positions, but those are the at the heart of American values, that people like that can have their say on the radio. When we moved down here, when the founders of WMNF moved down here in 1978 and came from all over the country, we wanted to create a place that would be a haven for people that thought peace and social justice were great values, and we could talk about them on the air. We thought that environmentalists were being left out of the air as we listened to commercial radio when we moved down. We thought that union members were being left off the air when we moved down. So we wanted to make sure that people that were in unions, especially the farm workers union, could have a place to come on and talk and not be vilified. Because if you listen to radio, if you've been here long enough, and you listen to radio back in 1978, 79, there was a lot of very right-wing talk, and you almost never heard from environmentalists, civil rights activists, union members, people that believed in peace and social justice. They almost never got a chance to be on the radio back then. That's why we built WMNF. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Jill in St. Pete. Jill, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yes, I have a couple things I want to say. First of all, I'd like to say I think your show is great. I think your shows on MNF are nonpartisan, and you give us a forum to speak our minds, and that's it. And so I appreciate it. A couple things I'd like to mention. One, I'd like to talk about the Congress and Paul Ryan talking about entitlements being the reason why the debt is so high. And when he talks about entitlements, he's talking about our Social Security. And my problem with that is that our Social Security isn't supposed to be an entitlement. It's supposed to be insurance that we put aside all our lives in our paycheck to have one in our old age so that we will not have to struggle in our old age. And he's talking about entitlements. Something tells me that they're taking our Social Security and putting it in the big pot with the other taxes. So this bothers me. And the other thing I'd like to say, what about the entitlements of the Congress to get those huge pensions that they get after they retire? Why isn't that being considered as one of the entitlements? So, you know, just want to let you know that that makes me pretty mad when I hear stuff like that.
Well, I think with the increasing federal deficits that we're going to see, especially since the tax cuts accelerated the federal deficits, we're going to hear more and more talk about where the federal government can cut. And one of the things they're going to look at is Social Security. They're going to try to make the excuse that we need to cut the federal budget, therefore we need to cut Social Security, even though Social Security is self-funded. As you said, Jill, we all pay into Social Security, and for the next 15 or 17 years, it's going to be able to pay out every cent it owes. After that, it's going to be in trouble as the baby boomers. Jill, thanks a lot. As the baby boomers retire, but we'll need to figure out what to do about Social Security. But people shouldn't confuse the general budget with the Social Security budget. Social Security is funded right now from the people of the U.S. as part of part of the money that they pay in as they pay their taxes and have their employers take out money from their paychecks. There is a line. It's the FICA line. That's where Social Security is funded from. It doesn't take money from the federal government. It actually creates a surplus for the federal government that the federal government uses to lend out. Let's go to Daryl in Tampa. Hey, Daryl, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
I'm good. What's up?
You're lying, Paul Ryan. Maybe somebody should explain that to him, since you don't explain it to him like the other things that he wants to do when all of his figures were messed up. But what I want to really address is Governor Scott, who says that he will always stand with the victims and the felons, you know, of the felons and stuff like that. You mean like he stood with the mother and father of Trayvon Martin when Martin was murdered by a guy who was a neighborhood watch? He wasn't even an officer of the law, and he ignored the dispatch of 911 when he called in, and they told him to stay in his car. I'm still trying to figure out, how did he get off with that? He murdered somebody, got out of his car with a gun, and went and found them. Where's Governor Scott on that?
And the governor was largely silent on the question of Trayvon Martin. He was a crime victim, and the governor was silent.
Wow. Yeah. Like he was silent with the lady who, I can't think of her name, was in her own house, and rather than shoot the person, shot the gun, I think, in the air or shot it in the wall.
Yeah, in Jacksonville.
To warn him to stay away, but yep. he wasn't with her either. But this is the same person also. When had the report card ever came out on these past hurricanes about people who died and what was his performance? And he wants to run for the Senate. I think he's an abysmal failure.
All right, Daryl, thanks a lot.
Thank you very
thanks.
Much.
All right, great to hear from you. And you're listening to 88.5 FM. Let's go to Kevin in Palmetto. Hi, Kevin. You're on WMNF. What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, Rob. A couple of things on my mind. I don't want this to turn into a Rob Laura, I love this, but the other caller mentioned that you were educated at Antioch College, and a whole bunch of us down here were, and there's a bunch of graduates, and we listen to you every chance we get.
Did you go to Antioch, Kevin?
I did.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I did, and I'm
small world.
Involved with the university and the college a little bit, the restarting of the college. So, and it's just that people don't understand the Antioch concept. I'd say it's very similar to what New College tries to do down in Sarasota.
Yeah, and I think Antioch would be in much better shape if it united with the university system like New College. New College started off as an independent and then united with the USF system. You know, Antioch has that slogan, be ashamed to die unless you've won a victory for humanity. And that is really a great slogan. That's kind of what I live by.
And that's Horace Mann. By the way, that's
right.
one of the original founders of Antioch College.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you're doing a great job. And another thing that maybe we could talk about, I was discussing with a friend out on the West Coast about how Oregon is not really making as many national headlines as they need to. Many people are disappointed with both the Democratic and the Republican Party. And where's the Green Party? Where's our third party candidates? And is there any movement that way locally to run some people? I mean, I can understand a lot of folks felt there wasn't any choice between presidents.
Well, there is a pretty strong Green Party chapter in Tampa, and there's Green Party activists all over this part of Florida's West Coast, and from time to time you hear them on MNF. And we'll get them back before, you know, the elections heat up too much. But I think one of the problems is that you heard Ashley Walker say on that TV show that it's going to cost $100 million, maybe $200 million, to run a U.S. Senate campaign. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, how is the Green Party going to tap into that kind of money to even make it, a player in the U.S. Senate race? I think that's one of the big problems, the money in politics.
Do you feel like Nader cost Gore the election in 2000?
No, we discussed that many times. If all the votes had been counted in 2000 here in Florida, Al Gore would have won the election. But the vote count was stopped, and that was the problem. If you had allowed the vote count to go on and all the votes had been counted, Al Gore would have beat George Bush in 2000 here in Florida.
And Nader's influence would have been negligible.
Yeah, Nader had, I forgot what the number was, he had tens of thousands of votes in Florida, but there were a whole lot of people that just didn't vote for either major party candidate and didn't vote for Nader. There's a lot of reasons why. It wasn't that Nader actually brought people into the voting booth who hadn't voted in a long time or who had never voted. They were inspired by his campaign. So he didn't take away votes from Gore as much as he brought new people into the process.
Are you aware, back in 2004 for the Kerry campaign, there was a big push to get a lot of people, new folks registered. Is there any new voter registration drives going on for these interim elections to, what do you want to call, mobilize the base and get folks up and get them out to vote?
I think all the major parties have voter registration drives going on. I was just at the March for Our Lives rally in St. Petersburg a few weeks ago, and there were people with tables trying to sign people up to vote. So, yeah, I think all the major parties are trying to do that.
A big push. Cool.
Yeah.
Well,
all right, Kevin.
Thanks for your time, Rob.
Thanks a lot.
Going to the reunion this summer?
I'm not. But Kevin, send me an email.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, yeah. Kevin. Great to hear from you. And let's see. Rich writes from the Green Party to Kevin's point. He says, we're hoping to have folks come out and run. If you're interested, please contact us via Facebook on our Facebook page for information. We need you. That's Rich Carpenter of the Hillsborough Green Party. So look up, if you're interested in the Green Party, you can look up Rich Carpenter and the Hillsborough Green Party, and then they'll tell you about their plans. Maybe you could become a candidate. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Sean Kinnan is coming up with the Midpoint program next. This is 88.5 FM WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg. First, we're going to get the latest news from National Public Radio. So let's go up to Washington, D.C. right now and see what's at the top of their list.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Shannon Van Sant.